I've described six past societies whose failure to solve the environmental problems that they created or encountered contributed to their eventual collapse. I dwelt on their failures because they offer us many lessons. However, it's certainly not the case that all past societies were doomed. The Icelanders have survived in a difficult environment for over 1,100 years, and many other societies have persisted for thousands of years. Those success stories also hold lessons for us, as well as hope and inspiration. They suggest that there are two contrasting types of approaches to solving environmental problems. This recognition stems especially from the work of archaeologist Patrick Kirch on Pacific islands of different sizes with different societal outcomes. The occupation of tiny Tikopia Island was still sustainable after 3,000 years. Medium-sized Mangaia underwent a deforestation-triggered collapse, and the largest of the three islands, Tonga, has been operating more or less sustainably for 3,200 years. Why did the small island and the large island ultimately succeed in mastering their environmental problems, while the medium-sized island failed? Small societies occupying a small island or homeland can adopt a bottom-up approach to environmental management. All its inhabitants are familiar with the entire island, know that they are affected by developments throughout the island, and share a sense of identity and common interests. Hence, everybody realizes that they will benefit from sound environmental measures that they and their neighbors adopt. That's bottom-up management, in which people work together to solve their own problems. The opposite approach is the top-down approach, suited to a large society with centralized political organization, like Polynesian Tonga. Tonga is much too large for any individual peasant farmer to be familiar with the whole archipelago. Some problem might be going on in a distant part of the archipelago that could ultimately prove fatal to the farmer's lifestyle, but of which he initially has no knowledge. Even if he did know about it, he might think that it made no difference to him. Conversely, a farmer might be inclined to gloss over problems in his own area, like deforestation, because he assumes that there are plenty of trees somewhere else. But in fact, he doesn't know. The king does have an overview over the whole archipelago, unlike local farmers. Also, the king may be motivated to attend to the long-term interests of the whole archipelago, because the king derives his wealth from the whole archipelago. He is the latest in a line of rulers, and he expects his descendants to rule Tonga forever. Thus, the king may practice top-down management of environmental resources, and may give all of his subjects orders that are good for them in the long run, but that they don't know enough to have formulated themselves. Traditional middle-sized societies, occupying medium-sized islands or homelands, may not be well-suited for either of these approaches. The island is too large for a local farmer to have an overview of or stake in all parts of the island. Hostility between chiefs and neighboring valleys prevents agreement or coordinated action. The island may be too small for a central government to have arisen, capable of controlling the entire island. That appears to have been the fate of Mangaia, and may have affected other middle-sized societies in the past. Today, when the whole world is organized into states, fewer middle-sized societies may be facing this dilemma, but it may still arise in countries where state control is weak. To illustrate these contrasting approaches to success, I shall now relate briefly the story of two small-scale societies where bottom-up approaches worked, and one large-scale society where top-down measures worked. In all three cases, the environmental problems addressed were deforestation, erosion, and soil fertility. However, many other past societies have adopted similar approaches for solving problems of water resources, fishing, and hunting. It should also be understood that bottom-up and top-down approaches can coexist. For example, in the United States and other democracies, we have bottom-up management by local neighborhood and citizens groups coexisting with top-down management by many levels of government. The first example is the Highlands of New Guinea, one of the world's great success stories of bottom-up management. People have been living self-sustainably in New Guinea for about 46,000 years. Until recent times, without economically significant inputs from societies outside the highlands. New Guinea is a large island just north of Australia, lying almost on the equator, and hence with hot tropical rainforest in the lowlands, but whose rugged interior consists of alternating ridges and valleys, culminating in glacier-covered mountains up to 16,500 feet high. The ruggedness of the terrain confined European explorers to the coast and lowland rivers for 400 years, during which it became assumed that the interior was uninhabited. It was therefore a shock when airplanes first flew over the interior in the 1930s for the pilots to see below them a landscape transformed by millions of people previously unknown to the outside world. The scene looked like the most densely populated areas of Holland, broad open valleys with few clumps of trees, divided as far as the eye could see into neatly laid out gardens, separated by ditches for irrigation and drainage, terraced steep hillsides reminiscent of Java or Japan, and villages surrounded by defensive stockades. When more Europeans followed up the pilots' discoveries overland, they found that the inhabitants were farmers who grew taro, bananas, yams, sugar cane, sweet potatoes, pigs, and chickens. We now know that the New Guinea Highlands were one of only 9 independent centers of plant domestication in the world, and that agriculture has been going on there for about 7,000 years, one of the world's longest-running experiments in sustainable food production. To European explorers and colonizers, New Guinea Highlanders seemed primitive. They lived in thatched huts, were chronically at war with each other, had no kings or even chiefs, lacked writing, and wore little or no clothing, even under cold conditions with heavy rain. They lacked metal and made their tools instead of stone, wood, and bone.